This is the podcast where the dark and creepy things we don't talk about discover a voice. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
There are places that seem to breathe history, where the past lingers in the air like a whisper, refusing to be forgotten. On Whidbey Island, in a cabin that was never meant to be more than a garage, a family's quiet retreat harbored secrets. Secrets that remained hidden until they could no longer be ignored. It began quietly, with subtle disturbances, a faint rustling in empty rooms, books that vanished without a trace, and plates that fell from secure perches to shatter on the cold kitchen floor. Most unsettling of all was the feeling, an icy, creeping sensation, of being watched. But in this small home, the line between perception and reality blurred. Were these just the tricks of an overactive imagination, or was something far more sinister at play? In the face of such mysteries, belief is a fragile thing. We all like to think that our senses can be trusted, that what we see and feel is real. But what happens when the evidence piles up, when your loyal dog cowers at shadows and your once skeptical father can no longer explain away the things he feels in the dead of night? Can we ever be certain of what's real when the past refuses to stay buried? Tonight, we explore a story of fear, family, and the lingering question that haunts us all. When the spirits come calling, will you believe? Dear Tony, I never thought I'd be the one to share a story like this, but after everything I've witnessed, keeping silent seems almost impossible. It all began in the 1990s, when I was still visiting my parents at their small cabin on Whidbey Island, a cabin that's been in our family since the late 1940s. It wasn't supposed to be much, just a garage, really. But after my parents installed a fireplace and made a few renovations, it became their cozy little home. To outsiders, it might have seemed quaint, peaceful even. But to us, it held something far darker. I can still remember the first time I felt it, the unmistakable sensation of being watched. It would happen after I woke up, when I was padding down the narrow hallway to take a shower. The air would feel heavy, almost electric, and the hairs on the back of my neck would stand straight up. Turning around, of course, I'd see nothing, only the empty, shadowed hallway. I brushed it off at first, blaming my nerves, or a restless night's sleep, but that sense of being followed never truly left me. It wasn't long before my mom, who had never been the type to jump at shadows, confessed something that caught me completely off guard. One morning, with a hesitant laugh, she said, "Your father thinks I'm losing it, but I swear we have ghosts." My heart raced. I hadn't told her about the unsettling feelings I'd been having, and hearing her admit to the same fear made it all too real. I told her I'd noticed a few odd things myself, but we both knew Dad wouldn't believe us. He was a practical man, rooted in logic, and had no room in his world for ghosts or spirits. The strangeness only escalated from there. Things began to disappear, old family photos, books, little items we had no reason to misplace. It was frustrating, but we tried to ignore it. Then there were the plates. They'd fall from the walls without warning, crashing to the floor in a shower of ceramic shards. One time, a Corel dinner plate broke into what seemed like a million pieces, and there was no explanation. It hadn't been near the edge of the counter, and no one had even been in the kitchen. I remember how Katie, our family dog, reacted to those moments. Normally, she was a playful ball of energy, always chasing tennis balls and begging for belly rubs. But when the spirits made themselves known, she'd climb into a lap and snuggle as close as possible, trembling in a way I'd never seen before. Dad still wasn't convinced until the day that changed everything. He'd been napping in his favorite recliner, as he often did, when he suddenly woke up and called out to Mom. "There's something sitting in my lap," he said, his voice shaken in a way I'd never heard. He couldn't see anything, but he could feel it, the weight pressing down on his legs. Mom looked at him with an expression that said, "I told you so," but she didn't gloat. We were all too disturbed to take any comfort in being right. One of the most memorable nights happened when my parents had to leave for Olympia early one Friday morning. They'd come to Seattle the evening before, and I'd gone to stay at the cabin alone with Katie. We timed our ferry rides perfectly, waving at each other as we passed on the water. I'll admit I wasn't thrilled about spending the night there by myself, but I tried to keep my nerves in check. That evening, Katie seemed on edge. She took a mouthful of her dog food into the living room, a quirky habit of hers. But this time she dropped it and immediately started growling and snapping at the air as if something unseen was trying to take it from her. I tried to brush off the tension, but later that night I felt a tap on the back of my head. It was gentle, almost playful, but it made my heart pound. I spun around, clutching at the empty air. There was nothing there. Katie and I ended up in the living room where I settled into the Haida bed, my trusty dog lying protectively beside me. As I read a book, trying to distract myself, I heard it. A faint snoring sound coming from the corner of the room. At first, I thought it might be Katie, but she was awake and alert. I even held my breath, hoping the noise was just in my head. But it continued, deep and steady. I had to know where it was coming from. I called out to Katie, but she wasn't in the room. She was sleeping soundly at the other end of the house. With a shiver running down my spine, I forced myself to return to the Haida bed and said goodnight to the invisible snorer, hoping the spirits would at least respect our need for rest. It wasn't just me who felt the presence, though. My brother, too, had his own share of terrifying nights at the cabin. He'd sleep on the other Haida bed in the living room, and more than once, he was woken up by the sound of music. Sometimes the radio would click on by itself, or the old bird music box perched high on a shelf would start winding up, playing its eerie, tinny tune. He'd lie there, heart pounding, feeling helpless and furious that the spirits were toying with him. But what could he do? The house had its own rules, its own mysteries, and it wouldn't let us forget. And then the strangest weekend of all came during Thanksgiving in 1998. I had arrived early that morning to help Dad get everything ready. It was just the two of us, with Mom still in the nursing home and Katie providing her usual cheerful but slightly nervous company. The turkey was already in the oven, and Dad needed my help with something simple, replacing the overhead kitchen light. The old fixture had burned out, and since it was one of those long fluorescent lights with a heavy wobbly cover, it was a two-person job. We managed to get the light changed, the cover securely in place, and Thanksgiving dinner went off without a hitch, or so we thought. 3 nights later, I was sitting in the living room trying to enjoy some late-night TV. Dad had already gone to bed, but the house seemed restless. It was as if the walls themselves were whispering, the sounds from the kitchen growing louder and more unsettling by the minute. Dishes clinked, cabinets creaked, and something I couldn't see seemed to be moving around. I kept the TV volume low, not wanting to wake Dad, but it felt like a losing battle against whatever was causing the noise. I couldn't take it any longer and decided to sleep in the laundry room. Yes, you heard that right, the laundry room. It was the only place where the energy of the house seemed calm, almost soothing. I had an inflatable arrow bed set up there, and it had become my go-to sleeping spot whenever the spirits felt particularly active. Sometime during the night, Katie joined me. Normally, she'd prefer sleeping anywhere but on that uncomfortable arrow bed, but not that night. She curled up beside me as if drawn there by something far more protective than her usual tennis ball obsessions. The next morning, Dad went to church, and I got a rude but familiar wake-up call from Katie, her cold nose pressing against my cheek, demanding breakfast. When I got up, I noticed something that sent a chill through me. The cover from the kitchen light, the one Dad and I had replaced just 3 days earlier, was lying neatly on the counter. It hadn't fallen. There was no broken glass, no mess. It was as if someone or something had gently removed it and placed it there. When Dad returned, I asked him, "What's wrong with the light? Did you take the cover off?" His expression mirrored mine, confused, unnerved. "I thought you did," he replied. That was all it took for us to realize what had happened. The spirits had been active during the night, and they weren't shy about reminding us of their presence. We could almost imagine them watching as we changed that light bulb, waiting for the perfect moment to make their move. That same night before I left for home, I offered to help Dad with the dinner dishes, but he insisted he'd do them later. As I drove away, he told me, "The house grew so cold it felt as if the sliding glass door had been left open." He double-checked, but everything was shut tight. The fire in the wood stove roared, yet the chill persisted, almost palpable. Then he saw the dish towels hanging from the oven door, moving as though caught in an invisible breeze. There was no wind, no logical explanation, just the stubborn cold and those gently waving towels. The spirits had made themselves known once more, and Katie wasn't having any of it. When Dad mentioned how she'd cowered that night, I knew exactly how she felt. The ghosts weren't always there, but when they were, it was impossible to ignore. We all wondered about the missing items, the plates that broke for no reason, the echoes of laughter that only the spirits seemed to hear. Even Dad, once the ultimate skeptic, had to admit that something strange lived in that cabin. To this day, I wonder if those spirits are still there, tucked away in the shadows, playing their mischievous games. We all learn to coexist in a way, but I can't say I miss it. If I ever do go back, I'll be ready, watching for every creak and whisper that the old house throws my way. Because now I know that ghosts are real, and they don't always stay silent. Sincerely, Elise. It's a strange thing, isn't it? How some places seem to hold echoes of those who came before. Echoes that refuse to be silenced, no matter how much we try to rationalize them away. Elise's story reminds us of that uneasy truth, the one that many of us try to brush aside. But when faced with unexplained happenings, the cold touch of unseen hands, the familiar yet chilling sound of ghostly music boxes, our sense of reality begins to fray. Psychologically, it's easy to consider the mind's ability to play tricks, to conjure feelings of being watched, or to misinterpret shadows as something more sinister. Maybe it was sleep paralysis that gave Elise's father the sensation of weight on his lap. Perhaps Katie, the ever-faithful family dog, picked up on the subtle changes in her human's behavior and reacted to their nervous energy. Fear can be infectious after all. And it's no wonder that our minds would respond with flight or fight instincts. But then, there are the parts of this story that defy simple explanation. A light cover gently placed on the counter without a single shard of broken glass. Towels flapping in the wind when there is no wind. These moments challenge even the most skeptical among us. Could it be that some energy, some spirit tied to the land, still watches over that cabin? Is it mischief? Or perhaps a message. If we choose to believe Elise, maybe these spirits are guardians, not foes. Mischievous, yes, but perhaps still attached to the family that's called the island home for generations. So, what do we make of it all? The psychologist in me might suggest theories of shared delusions or heightened emotional sensitivity. The believer in me, though, can't help but wonder. If you walk through a place with enough history, perhaps the past leaves a mark that never truly fades, and in the quietest, most unexpected moments, it makes itself known. And thank you for sharing your story, Elise, and for the rest of you listening. Do you believe in ghosts, or are these just tricks of the mind? That's something you'll have to decide the next time you hear a whisper in the dark.
Want more ghost stories of the paranormal? Press subscribe now wherever you get podcasts. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day, all year long. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.